Welcome to the SureCast, a podcast produced by Bernstein Sure, covering a variety of law, public affairs, and community-related issues of interest. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the firm, and no advice in this podcast should be considered legal advice. If you are in need of legal counseling, please call Bernstein Sure at 207-774-1200. Thank you, and on with the show.
And welcome to the SureCast podcast. I'm Tori Ryden, and joining me is Mike Bossy. I want to welcome you to the SureCast, Mike. Thanks for being here, Tori.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And just giving some background, Mike's been with Bernstein Sure since 2001. He's the chair of Bernstein Sure's construction practice group and a member of the firm's litigation group and data security team. He represents all facets of the construction industry, from developers to general contractors, subcontractors, and suppliers, from project inception through contract negotiations, and if needed, to claims and litigation. And he works on litigation construction matters, not only in Maine, but also in Massachusetts and in New Hampshire, and in private arbitrations with the American Arbitrations Association. So there's so much more to talk about you, but let's get started, Mike, on that front, which is, this is a, I think about Portland, Maine, I think about the entire state of Maine, and I think about New Hampshire and Massachusetts. What busier times than from 2001 until now to be kind of involved with the construction industry? I'm assuming that your days are just hopping. You have so much going on.
Yes, that's true. I think the construction law sphere of being a lawyer is somewhat recession-proof in that in the good times, as you know, referring to Portland, there are buildings going up on, it seems, every block. It's not clear how many hotels the city of Portland is going to be able to have built here. But in the downtimes, in the recessionary times, there's more litigation. There's more people fighting over smaller pieces of the pie. In good economic times like this, there's more development going on. I'm doing more contract negotiation. I'm doing more during the project legal advice that's intended to ward off larger litigation problems down the road, and more day-to-day counseling of my construction clients that frankly is a lot more fun than being in court.
I would think that it's really exciting to, I mean, you're partnering in a way with these construction companies and helping them prior to any problems. I mean, you understand things so well that you can help them navigate right from the get-go. And I think I'm wondering, what are the things that people kind of don't know if they think, oh yeah, we're going to do this, and they don't kind of think through all of the steps?
So the construction disputes come in a relatively small variety of issues. They're either a dispute over the scope of work. They are some type of quality issue. And you can imagine here in Maine, it's about water intrusion mm-hmm. and things like that. Or it's about schedule. Again, we are blessed to have four real seasons as opposed to other portions of the country. And so we have this thing up in Maine called winter conditions for construction companies, where if they're not able to get a building envelope done before winter hits, then the costs of finishing that project skyrocket. Price. And along with price is the ability of folks to pay for the building that goes up. So usually one of my disputes fall into one or more of those different categories, depending on the project.
Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously the incentive is to get things really rocking and rolling before winter hits.
Yes. And I think to put a point on your question, litigation, as I think we all know, has become so unbelievably expensive, whether you're in court or you're in a private arbitration, that spending money while the project is happening to try to head off those big litigation issues almost always is more economical for the construction project than everybody kind of retreating to their respective positions, each hiring their own respective law firm, and then heading off to court, where ultimately the dispute is likely to be decided by someone that doesn't have a great construction background. No disrespect to anybody, but they probably are having to think about the construction litigation along with a whole bunch of other cases that they're handling. And so they're just by nature, they're not going to be able to have as intimate an understanding of the construction project and the dispute as all of us do on the ground. So if we're able to resolve the dispute before it really gets into litigation, that almost is always the best result for everybody concerned.
Yeah, sounds like it. And so I'm curious, how many people are in your group and how difficult is it for people to come in and to seek out your counsel?
So the there are only a handful of us here at Bernstein Shore who I would classify as nearly full-time construction lawyers. But that's because there are only a handful of lawyers in Maine who I would count as full-time construction lawyers. I'm a litigator by day job, so I litigate a whole bunch of other matters, including construction matters. And so we have, we have some members of our group that that have other portions of their practice, including construction. But George Burns, myself, Asha Chevaria, are the kind of foundational part of the dispute of the group here in Maine. We have Rick and Kelly Gagliuso, who are longtime construction lawyers in our Manchester office. And then we have some other associates. Connor Shankman is a senior associate that we have. That's the main core of our construction group. But again, as I said, there are relatively few number of construction lawyers statewide, and we often find ourselves all working on the same cases over and over again.
And also it makes you a real expert. I know that you are often giving talks on this topic. Is that part of the job that you enjoy? Because it is, you do become an instructor, I would think. It's almost like teaching a class, I would think.
It is like teaching a class because I now have the benefit of 20 years of experience. I always say to clients, when I do their contract, if I never hear from them again, that means the construction project went really well, because why would they call me, right?
Right.
I only find out about the construction projects that went really badly because they are in need of my services. My wife says, if you're calling Mike, things aren't good. Right? So yeah, I have had a wealth of knowledge as a result of doing this for 20 years. And it was interesting, as I was doing this podcast with you, I was thinking about what lawyers used to be, 30, 40 years ago, where you had a small town and maybe there were two or three lawyers, and those lawyers did everything for everybody in the town that needed to be done. So one day you might be doing a will, the next day you might be doing a construction dispute, the next day you might be doing some criminal matter, and that's just not what the law is anymore. Now it's the opposite of that. Now we're super specialized. And so, yeah, when I lecture, I'm lecturing, sometimes I'm lecturing to other lawyers who still consider themselves general practitioners and might stumble across a construction case, but don't really have the same background that the rest of us do as a result of having done it for a couple of decades. So being an instructor is a rewarding part of the job, because it reminds me about how long I've been doing this and how much a part of the construction industry that I've become as a result of doing this in Maine for such a long time.
And in 2014, I believe it was, you and George Burns teamed up and you wrote an important book, actually, that it was really informed the construction legal industry. It's called Building the Construction Case, A Blueprint for Litigators. And I think that's wonderful. What did that take to develop this? And, is it a bestseller?
Well, I don't think you're going to see it in the New York Times anytime soon, right, on the list. But it took a long time. The purpose of the book was to try to impart some of our quote-unquote wisdom over the years to other lawyers who, as I said, maybe don't do construction law every day, but also to some of our clients to try to under. So the way the book was organized was from the very front end, from day one, when a client who has not previously been your client walks in and starts to talk to you about the dispute. What do we need to know as construction lawyers on the front end? And then the book kind of takes you through the life cycle of a case, going through the discovery process, going through trial, going through whatever appellate procedures there might be post-trial, so that clients who haven't gone through that process get some window into it, run in, kind of not learning on the job, so to speak, so that they've got some understanding about what they're likely to go through and how things that get told to us, or more importantly, don't get told to us in the initial meeting, can kind of rear their ugly head later on when we find out about them through other means.
I look at that and I think, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I think that's extraordinary that you're putting out there all of this really important information to help people. I mean, this was something that it was an endeavor that took a long time, but it really is, I don't want to call it free advice, but kind of, isn't it? And who does that? What attorney does that?
Yeah, I keep waiting for one of my adversaries to call and say, you know what you said on page 67 of the book, right? They haven't done that yet, but it was fun to do, actually. George, when I got here in 2001, George had run a construction boutique law firm here in town, and he and his partners had joined Bernstein Shore at the beginning of 2001, and then I came to the firm a couple months afterwards. And so I had the benefit from day one at this firm of being seen as part of a group of specialized construction lawyers. And George has been at this two decades longer than I have. And so he and I have worked together through the arc that's been my career as a construction lawyer. And then he and I have gotten to work with the younger construction lawyers coming behind me. So, I just was talking to him before we came down here. George and I talk about cases that he and I are involved in, or cases that I'm involved in and I need his advice, or cases that he's involved in, he needs my advice. We do that kind of on a daily basis. And what a great thing to have other construction lawyers here that we get to talk to, all for the benefit of our prospective and collective clients of the firm.
A really smart group of people, I know. You live in Scarborough, and so we're looking at a couple of different really exciting projects. The Downs is in Scarborough. That's a project that's over 500 acres. It's huge. And then Rock Row in Westbrook, which is, I think, a 70-acre project. How exciting is it for you to see these undertakings? Each one is really kind of, I don't want to say claiming. I mean, I think they've got these really great ideas for not just resuscitating, but listening to the community's needs and responding, and hopefully helping to create housing situations to help relieve what's really become a crunch situation in Portland. I'm wondering what it's like for you to look at these big projects.
So the two projects are very different, but what comes to mind is the 2004 Red Sox had a saying, right? Why not us? Remember that?
Right, I remember.
Right, and so I remember when the Rock Row project was getting started, and we were, we collectively, the Portland area, became aware of the other projects that the Rock Row folks had done on a national basis. It was pretty clear that they had done this kind of around the country. And the idea of having a development that was a rock quarry turned into something that is going to resemble a small city onto its own is pretty darn exciting. Mm-hmm. The Scarborough project, as you said, where I live, we don't have a We have something that loosely resembles a downtown, and here you have a couple of longtime Scarborough families, including the Risbera Construction Company that's centered in Scarborough, who got together and purchased this site with the intent on developing it and providing to the town something that the town has wanted for a long time. And on, you know, if you live in Scarborough and you drive around there, that is a massive piece of land that has been sitting in Scarborough for a long time, undeveloped. And now, in a way that's, you know, because the same and dissimilar from Rock Row, is going to hopefully is going to turn into something of a town center, which Scarborough didn't have. So why not us, right? Why wouldn't we have these type of large scale, really exciting developments in the Portland metropolitan area that we hear more than occasionally that this is one of the best places to live in the country? So it's so both of them are exciting to me.
They really are. What's coming up? Is there anything trend-wise in addition to Rock Row and the Downs? Is there anything else that's coming up that you've kind of been hearing about?
Well, I think the what's interesting here in town is the constant development that has been happening over, I would say, the past decade, where you're now seeing development on the eastern waterfront, which, if you remember back, I don't know how many years ago it was, right? 15, there was a Bath Iron, right? There was a Bath Ironworks site there when we were all growing up. And now there's going to be, there already is development happening there. And then you also see development going the other side, kind of growing out west. From the traditional Old Port, between the Old Port and the West End. And all of that is a supplement to what us in Portland have always seen as the traditional downtown, being Congress Street and the Old Port. And so that's super exciting, because sometimes when I like to run in town, and when I'm running around, it's really amazing to see the scale of development that's happening here in Portland. Not just the hotels, but these larger developments that are happening, that have brought WEX to the downtown, that are going to bring Vets Choice here, that are going to bring these other
Sun
Life, right? These large entities that are coming from the suburbs of Portland to downtown Portland to show off everything that the downtown is.
I know that you likely take the temperature around the state of Maine. Are there any other big things that are happening? I know the push is on, you know, broadband is going to be brought to different areas now that have been struggling with it. A lot of money has been going into that. And the push is on through the Mills administration to try to build up other areas beyond Augusta and north.
So the one that always amazes me, and I've felt this way since the beginning, since the recession, really, is that we haven't figured out a way to develop more of our resources towards our infrastructure. You know, every year we hear about the number of decaying bridges that we have, the number of decaying roads that we have, and there never seems to be enough of a coordinated push. Not for lack of effort, but it just never seems to get done, either on the regional or national level, where we're able to devote enough money to do anything other than reactionary maintenance that has to be done on the infrastructure. And it's just, it's amazing to me when I look at other areas of the world that have a very, very developed and forward-looking infrastructure and rail system, and we don't have that. And I don't understand what the forces are that are acting upon us that don't allow us to get to the place where we can't get an infrastructure bank or we can't get more funding developed. But it just seems it's been fits and starts as long as I've been doing this work. And I remember writing about it for the Portland Press Herald back when Obama was elected, and I was super excited about it. And then it just never happened. And it kind of feels like we're in the same place 12 years later.
Well, you're an avid runner, so maybe during some of those runs, you can hatch a really good plan and then deliver it up to Augusta and down to Washington, D.C. I'm sure all Mainers would have your back on that. We all understand the pains of potholes and the concerns over bridges as well. So excellent point there. What's been your most gratifying? I'm wondering, I don't know if you can share any particular cases. What's been really gratifying to you?
So as I've gotten older, I'd like to think that I've gotten wiser, and I'd like to think that I have gotten more patient as an attorney. And what I always say to my clients is that part of my scope of work is, especially in litigation, is to take the stress level off the client, and so that I'm the one worrying about their matter, so that they don't have to. And so when they're worried about it, when they can't sleep at night, they should call me or email me and say, here's what I'm worried about, so that I can tell them, number one, I've got it. And number two, please stop worrying about it and get back to what you're doing in your day job so that you're not driving yourself crazy. And it seems like in the past couple of years, for a whole variety of reasons, everything is just kind of fever pitched nowadays, right? Everything is, with proliferation of email and social media and Twitter and everything else, that everything is kind of going at warp speed all the time. And to me, it's that much more important that we're able to spend the time that, we need to spend as lawyers in true counseling of our clients. And in also, and also being able to calm the situation down and to kind of live in the present of what we're doing, so that we can do the best job that we can on the matter that we have before us. And I'd like to think that I've gotten better over that as time has gone on. And I, you know, compare the first trial I did way back when I was a youngster, and the number of trials that I've done now, where I obviously have have got a high degree of confidence in being a trial lawyer because I've done it a whole bunch of times. And it's kind of, you can't read in any textbook in law school about what gut sense tells you when a witness is telling the truth and when they're lying, but I've developed a pretty good sense on when people are telling me the truth and when they're not telling me the truth over the years. And like I said, there's just no textbook on that, right?
The years mellow you, and they also kind of put you in a really good position, don't they? To help other people.
So that is the most gratifying is that I'd like to think that I'm able to, from day one when a client comes in until the last day that the case is going on, that to the extent that, although litigation is never going to be enjoyable for them, but that I can walk them through the process so that they understand every step of the process and are able to make intelligent decisions about whatever risk they're facing and the cost that they're expending on us to get to the best net result that they can in whatever the case is that they're facing, then I've done my job.
Wow. I think it's important for us to put out there how people can reach you if they want to talk to you about hiring you or maybe get some advice from you.
So phone still works.
Great. Let's give your phone number and your email address.
228-7276 is my direct.
That's area code 207.
207, and my email is mbosse, B-O-S-S-E, at bernsteinshore.com.
So you got a lot of years left in you for helping Mainers with litigation and also helping to lead the construction industry. And again, in the three-state area, what do you have coming up that you're looking forward to?
So I have more books to write. I would like to find the time in the couple of decades, hopefully, that I have left practicing construction law to do more with respect to the industry. I mean, I do think that, as I was talking about specialization earlier, one thing that my colleagues and I have as a truly great feature of what we do is that we really do feel that we are part of the construction industry. And so whether it is lecturing or helping to pass new legislation or helping to pass infrastructure initiatives, doing things to further the construction industry generally, I'd like to be involved in, whether that's strictly legal or not. I mean, one of the things that we haven't talked about that I think everybody knows the construction industry is facing is a huge labor shortage.
Yes.
And you know, if you're trying to get somebody to work on your house, that it's not easy to do that anymore, to find somebody that can timely get to you.
But this is a national issue. Along with the infrastructure problem, finding a solution to that, how do we find a solution to this?
Well, so I think that we need to, and our trade groups, AGC and ABC here in Maine, they're doing that on a state and a national level, but we're trying to figure out ways to do different things to get more younger people involved and excited about being in the construction industry. And, you know, obviously, as with every industry, there have been huge technological advances in terms of artificial intelligence and drones and 3D mapping and real-time stuff in the construction industry. So for young people today, being involved in the construction industry can be a great career. It's going to be different than the way the previous generations have lived it. And the problem's been simmering for many years now. So that labor shortage isn't going to solve itself overnight. But it's vitally important that the industry attracts people that are in their late teens, early 20s into the industry, and that we showcase all the positive things that the industry can bring for people in their careers.
I know Sean Moody started the Blue Collar Scholarship Fund, which is a huge movement in that direction. Do you see that? That's got legs for the industry, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know about that in detail. I did see some information related to that, but that's the kind of things that that's the kind of stuff that we need to do, right? Because I'm afraid that the view out there is that it isn't an industry where people can get involved and have a long time successful career. People could think, well, I'm going to be kind of a laborer and that's going to be my job. And that's not true. There are so many exciting things going on in the construction industry that mirror all the other technological innovations that we're making in other industries. And, you know, you've kind of hinted at this earlier, but you know what we do in the construction industry? We build things. Mm-hmm. And when they get done, you have a product to showcase. It's a beautiful building if we all did it right. And that would be really something really exciting for the younger generation to be a part of.
I love what you're doing, and it's clear you love what you're doing. And I just want to thank you for sharing your deep knowledge in construction and litigation. And I just want to wish you all the best, Mike, because you're just a great human being. And I love it when it comes down to it. As you mellow, you're becoming more of a human, and that's only going to work in your favor.
Thanks so much, Tori.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening to SureCast.
Thank you for listening to the SureCast, a Bernstein Shore podcast. We hope you have enjoyed the program. To find out more information about the topics discussed in this episode and more, please visit www.bernsteinshore.com/media. Thank you.